Frank's Red Hot is the perfect blend of flavor and heat. So you can use an entire bottle to make recipes like buffalo chicken dip or buffalo nachos, or even things that don't start with buffalo. Frank's Red Hot. I put that on everything.
Hey, Craig.
Hey.
Wait, that's like, is that like the Fonzie?
No, that was just me saying, hey, well, I'm not.
You sounded like the Fonz, though.
Well, that's purely
sounded like Arthur Fonzarelli.
Purely coincidental.
How old do you have to be to get that reference? You got the reference, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
I don't know.
Good.
Probably.
So how much younger than you could someone be and still get that reference?
Well, he's like, I don't know, like he's been referenced on later stuff, so.
That is true.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know about that, but I did want to start this episode before we get into it by issuing some thank yous. First, I just ran a beer raffle. We talked about Skookum last week. I don't want to rehash that, but I raffled off some Skookum beer. I got a lot of donations from some of my Facebook beer groups, and then a lot of Coogs on Twitter too. And Coogs in my Facebook beer groups as well. So that was pretty cool. We raised over $1,500 for various, Black Lives Matter adjacent charities. And some Coogs won, quite a few of the winners. I think three of the five sets were won by Coogs. Four of the five sets, actually, because one Coog won two.
That's awesome.
So I appreciate everyone that donated to that. That's quite a lot of beer. That's over. That's almost six times what the beer actually costs retail. So that's a pretty cool return on my investment there. Another thank you. I meant to mention this last episode, but it slipped my mind because we had Matt on. But my dad had lost his house to a fire, and we had put out. My sister had created a GoFundMe for him, just to kind of help help get some funds to help, you know, the process of moving and finding a new home. And it was totally overwhelming. Over $5,000 raised, and with a lot of notes that said go Cougs and everything. I know once we put it on Coug Center, the donations really started jumping up, and so I appreciate all of you. My dad is still looking for a place to live in Yakima. It's tough to rent with a dog and a couple cats. He actually, because of the amount of money, they have the potential to put a down payment on a home. So he wouldn't have been able to do that without those donations. So. I really appreciate everyone kind of keep that really, you know, opens up his options. Right now they're living out of a trailer outside of his parent-in-law's house. So that they'd love to find a place to live, but, it's been kind of tough. The Yakima rental market's apparently really tough. But anyway, thank you everyone, for donating that. It really meant a lot to my dad. I'm pretty sure y'all made him cry a couple times. So I'm going to see him this weekend. I'm probably going to force him to record a thank you video that I'll share on social media and everything. So be on the lookout for that.
I'm just imagining how uncomfortable your dad's going to be recording that.
Yeah, very uncomfortable.
That'll be totally worth
Maybe
it.
Maybe I'll get him, put a few beers in him first.
Oh, that'll be better.
But yeah, so this is Podcast Versus Everyone. I'm Craig Powers. With me is Jeff Neusser.
Hello.
Jeff, how are you doing today, tonight, this late night?
It's like this every year. I go on summer vacation and then it's doesn't really get any less busy. So it's, we're hanging in there. We got the kids are doing virtual camp, which is a thing. So, so that's interesting watching them do camp via Zoom. With other kids. So that's a little weird, but other than that, let's see, we, got a chance to visit with a friend today. It was pretty cool. He was our wish granter from Make-A-Wish when Tristan got his wish trip to Disneyland, whatever that was, 8 years ago, 7 years ago.
Wow.
And so he drove down. We haven't seen him in a couple of years, so he drove down and got to hang out and visit. And he's also a former teacher himself. Was a PE teacher in Seattle and does a really cool fundraiser for Make-A-Wish every year where he does laps around the field where he used to teach to the number of years that he is. And so he's 69 now. And so normally he's done this thing, but he couldn't do it because schools are closed. He does it on his birthday. Schools are closed. And, you know, normally kids at the school join him. And anyway, so kind of sucky, but he walked around his neighborhood to the tune of 11 and a half miles.
Oh.
In order to raise money for Make-A-Wish. So, yeah, Lou Cutler, guy's the man. So it was good to meet with him. And, you know, I wish the weather was better, but, you know, it's all right, well, I guess. It's better for doing yard work, which I'm doing plenty of.
Yeah, you live where you live. So.
I do. But what's up with you?
Obviously. Because,
I mean, this is hard. We didn't podcast last week. So, like, we got, like, all this catching up to do and, you know, it's like,
well, there's not. Well, I went to Oregon. I guess I talked about that trip. I don't know if I did, but that was interesting to do.
Yeah,
like
you said you were going
a social distance trip to the beach. There was very typical Oregon beach weather. We felt pretty uncomfortable. We were staying in Gerhardt, which is a smaller town, and you know that we go to the beach. There wasn't a lot of people around, and. We drove down to Seaside before we left, and there was quite a few people walking around without masks on, and Amanda and I have talked about how we wish we would have just turned around and went away, but so we've been a bit nervous about that, but we had, especially with the little one who will intermittently wear a mask and intermittently not.
Yeah, well, that's part of why all the other responsible people have to wear one, because there will always be people who either refuse or small children who just can't deal. So
yeah,
it's up to the rest of us.
To her credit, we went to the zoo, which has reopened mercifully. Went to the zoo the other day, and she went a solid hour and a half before she started complaining about the mask. So
that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Most adults can't do that.
Yeah.
you know, I'm right.
Yep.
Most of the adults are like, I've been in Costco for 20 minutes. I can't deal with this mask anymore.
Well,
losers.
My partner Amanda is a nurse practitioner and she wears it all fucking day, so I don't want to hear your little bitch.
Are you telling me she does that all day and she does not get carbon dioxide poisoning? Because I don't believe you.
Yeah, it's amazing. Maybe she's just, you know, maybe her and every single other medical professional are just specially adapted to it.
I was going to say, I might believe that Amanda was specially adapted because she's a pretty special person, but apparently everybody else does it too, so.
Yeah. So yeah, but that trip overall was nice to get out of the house. We basically we cooked our own meals for the most part. We got a little condo thing, and
that's always nice, especially with a small child.
There was a McMenamin's right across the street, so we had got some pizza one night, but takeout, you know.
Yeah.
It was pretty interesting. So it was nice to just get out of the house. It was really nice for the toddler too. She's terrified of the ocean, apparently. We literally could only play on the beach as far back as you could possibly go on the beach, before there was a grassy hill, and we had to be right next to that grassy hill. So she's not really into the ocean right now, but she did enjoy digging around on the sand and all that. So
taking kids to the beach is seriously one of the best things. Just they will dig and they will run and they will, you know, splash in the water. About the only thing you have to do is just try not to get totally terrified that they're going to wander too far out into the water.
Oh, yeah. And we didn't have to worry about that with Bea because she would go absolutely nowhere near the water.
See, is she afraid of it or is she just
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I we went to the Oregon coast last year, and it was like last fallish, and we were standing on the beach in town, Cannon Beach, and we were just kind of playing, and I wasn't paying enough attention to the tide, and it rushed in and got us. And I kind of picked her up quickly because our stuff was next to us, and like I picked up our stuff, and I think that kind of freaked her out, and I think she got a little traumatized at that moment, and then that hasn't worn off yet. She hasn't been back to the beach enough for it to be rectified. So yeah, it's she's just not into it at all.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, you know. Did you guys get her like a bucket and shovels?
Oh, of course.
Oh yeah, it's the best. Did you buy it down there? Or did you bring it with you? Because if you bought it down there, you probably paid $20 for something that would cost you like $3 at the dollar store.
No, we already had some.
Oh, it's smart.
We've had some for a while. Yeah,
that's why you're my podcast co-host, because you're smart. Like,
well, that wasn't me. They just appeared. I had nothing to do with that.
You went to an ice cream shop.
Yeah, I did.
The famous ice cream shop in Gearhart, Oregon.
The Sweet Shop.
The Sweet Shop. They're pretty great.
Have you been there?
I have not, but Sarah has, because she used to work at the Young Life camp down there.
Oh, yeah. I so actually went that to that camp when I was in high school.
Did you?
Yeah. Ugh. The big thing was no purple. There was the guy's side was blue.
No purple.
And the girl's side was red, and they said no purple. You couldn't
no
go over.
No purple.
We made some purple sometimes. I'm not going to lie.
What? At a church camp? I don't believe it.
Young Life's not a church camp, you know. they take anyone. Right. They take anyone.
Well, yes, but the primary purpose of the camp is pretty transparent.
I had a shirt for a long time, like in college and stuff. From that camp, it had like a surfboard on it and stuff. I remember. And then nice. So that was the only that was my one experience with Gearhart before.
There you go.
Before this time.
Well, now you have a new memory.
There's a McMenamins and a golf course and stuff. Like wow. That's part of the McMenamins. So fancy wow. McMenamins there.
Gearhart's growing up.
Yeah. So yeah, we went to the ice cream shop. Great ice cream shop. You should definitely check it out. Saw a nice little interaction between the ice cream shop owners and some people wearing some provocative MAGA gear. that was interesting. I don't really want to get into it. I recommend the ice cream shop. They're doing good stuff, and I appreciate how they handled it. And so I check them out. Sweet
yeah.
shop. Gearhart.
Yeah. Speaking of things we appreciate. We appreciate 4-star basketball recruits.
Yes. Again, we have another one to talk about. what is like, this world?
Like, this is, like, seriously, this is bananas.
I mean, we're talking about as many 4-star basketball recruits, more than since the birth of this podcast, more than any football recruits, any 4-star football recruits we've ever talked about.
Yeah.
I don't think there's been a 4-star football recruit since we started this podcast, actually. Because I don't think we had one in last, maybe we did. I don't remember. Oh, maybe the quarterback was, I don't know. But yeah, so, Andre, I'm going to say it's Andre.
Yeah. I think it's probably Andre.
Andre Yakimovsky.
Yakimovsky.
Macedonia.
I'm already dreading the Eldridge Kasner. Yakim. It's like, yeah, it's going to be bad.
Just
but it's going to be good at the same time.
If
he's Yakim.
But yeah, Andre Yakimovsky, got to give some kudos to Jeff on this one. He signed. He was not evaluated, international recruit. That's not that weird. But he was kind of viewed as a top international recruit. Jeff, in writing about the signing, you said if he was an American, recruit, he'd probably land around the top 100 and you know, be in the 4-star range. And sure enough, the very next day, 247 Sports gave him an evaluation, and he checked in at 4 stars and a 95 rating. One of the highest rated basketball recruits in WSU history now, just outside the top 100 recruits for the year, which gives a third top 150 recruit in this class now.
Which is insane.
Yes, that's not, that's, Jeff, I know you did, you gave, you wrote up a nice evaluation. And once you just kind of give your thoughts on him, I really liked your point that he, you know, at 6'7", he could potentially be a point guard for us.
Yeah, he, this is a kid who's really skilled. And the, you know, the video that was circulating on him was from the Euro Bees, which was last summer. So, thinking of like these different levels of competition, the Euro Bees are like the second tier of the European Championship. So you got the Euro A's, which is, you know, your big time countries, big time basketball countries. You know, I'm assuming it's, you know, countries like, you know, Spain, Italy, you know, like, you know, some of the more, you know, well-known basketball countries in Europe. And then, you know, so North Macedonia is the, you know, the country he plays for, and they were in the Euro Bees, and he was just like shredding people, like absolutely shredding people. And he was doing it in a way, though, that was like just extremely skilled. He was doing all sorts of different things. I mean, he was basically, it looked like he was basically the primary ball handler. Again, it's 6'7", right? So basically the primary ball handler, you know, could get to the rim, could shoot outside, was rebounding like crazy. You know, it didn't really, you know, like most of these highlight videos didn't really show much in the way of, you know, didn't really show much in the way of defense. So, you know, for whatever that's worth, but just completely having his way with these guys. Now the Euro Bees are, you know, pretty significant step down from the Euro A's. And this was like U19 stuff. So, you know, younger guys, you know, but peers. And he was just shredding them. And you know, when you watch the video, you can see the competition level's not great. You can see a lot of those guys are, you know, not great players, not real physically developed, et cetera. But, you know, when someone sort of stands head and shoulders above the other guys, that's what really sticks out. Right. And so and that's what I saw in this. And so I kind of let my mind wander as to what kind of role he might have on this team. And one thing we know is that, you know, they definitely were looking for, the Cougars definitely looking for a point guard. Isaac Bonton is, you know, I think was, you know, willing and able to try and be a point guard last year, but I think pretty clear that's not his best position. You know, he's not a great passer. He does get pretty loose with the ball when he's called upon to facilitate versus just when he's, you know, shooting. So, you know, I think it was pretty obvious that they're, you know, trying to, you know, slide a point guard in there, you know, hoping maybe Jefferson Koulibaly can be that guy, you know, the freshman from, I think, you know, Toronto. I think they're hoping he could be that guy. But, you know, they're kind of relying a lot on a freshman to step in there. And there was, you know, they had had some offers out to some grad transfer point guards, didn't end up getting any of them. But it was just sort of clear that they were really, you know, kind of thinking about adding another player who could be a point guard. You know, I don't know if Yakimovsky can be a legitimate point guard. But I do know that that he certainly looks like a competent enough ball handler, a good enough passer, really looks like an excellent passer, that he could be, you know, an option there. And we know that Kyle Smith loves his versatile guys, right? Like, we know he wants the 6-tool players. He wants guys who can kind of do a little bit of everything. And this is a kid like that. So, you know, kind of got me thinking what his role might be. You know, maybe he starts with Bonton. Maybe he is, you know, kind of the primary ball handler facilitator in that setup. And sort of the nice thing about that is even if he's sort of playing point guard, he doesn't necessarily have to guard the other team's point guard, right? Because Bonton's on the floor. He can guard the other team's point guard. So it'll be interesting to see how those things fit. But I think bottom line is I would not be shocked at all if he were to find his way into the starting lineup sooner rather than later. He's got that kind of well-rounded skill set. And I think the other thing is he's reportedly heavier, stronger than what he was when I saw that video. So if he's playing at, you know, 6'7", 200, 205, which is what's been reported at this point, you know, that's not a small kid.
No.
That's not a small kid.
Especially if you're in a guard.
Yeah, and he's also 19, right? He's 19. He's not coming in as an 18-year-old, and he's been playing pro ball, so he's been playing on an amateur contract, but he's been playing with a professional organization, and he got just pretty sparing minutes with their first team this year, but he was on basically, you know, he's practicing with the men. So, you know, these are all things that to me point toward a guy who could play immediately and maybe answers a lot of questions. You know, I mean, Noah Williams got a lot of question marks in terms of can he, you know, step into a bigger role. A lot of that depends on his offensive development. So Yakimovsky is already a much more polished offensive player than what we saw last year from Noah Williams. So, you know, he's an exciting player. He fills a need and, you know, is a guy who could be, you know, a starter pretty much right out of the gate.
Yeah, it's exciting just to see them wrap up a class like this. He's signed already. The only guy that hasn't signed is Rosario. So,
yeah, that's a little worrisome.
A little worrisome. He, you know, possibly still being recruited by Utah and some others. Hopefully they can, you know, lock him in because he's an exciting player as well. One thing to touch on that you reported and we heard is that, and then other places reported after that too, the reason they were able to sign Yakimovsky, add him to the class when potentially would have thought of all of the scholarships are tied up is that they – NCAA, they're expecting NCAA to allow an extra scholarship because the early entry date is the pullout date is so late this year. I think it's officially in August, I think, but NCAA right now. But it's just kind of putting teams in a bind with a scholarship situation. So it sounds like they're going to get an extra scholarship this year to make up for that. And so obviously with CJ Ellaby testing the NBA waters, we don't know whether or not he's going to come back yet still. He's obviously getting more opportunity, hopefully, to show himself at some point. And so he may, you know, he's looking for that first round guarantee. But, we'll see where that goes. But, yeah, that's why they could bring in this exciting – Macedonian player, and hopefully he's as good as advertised, and a very exciting addition. It's funny, you look at this, you talk about that. Well, the overall recruiting class now is sitting as high as WSU ever gets, really. It's sitting at national rank 31 on 247 right now. In fourth in the Pac-12, which is nuts for a WSU basketball
recruiting class. Totally
bonkers. Very exciting.
Can't even overstate how crazy that is.
Yeah, that just doesn't happen. Fourth ranked recruiting class in the league, 31st overall. That might also speak to a little bit of Pac-12 recruiting maybe down a little bit, but but still fourth overall, very solid class, one of the best classes in WSU history, without a doubt. Especially if Rosario signs, even if he doesn't, this is still an insanely good class. And it's funny, you're talking about these six tool guys. You look at you know, the kind of list and of the six well, the commits and signees, you have four guys that are listed as either combo guard or small forward. And you kind of end up with those types of guys when you're searching for toolsy guys, is these like sort of vague wing players where they can do a lot. And that's really the kind of player like CJ Elebi is. And then you got the big guys and the athletic bigs and Jackson and Abugidi. So, again, we've talked about this class a lot. Yakimovsky's just piling on to a class we were already excited about. We were already excited about it before Rosario committed. So, like, this is just another, like, piling on of it. Like, it's an exciting class that makes you feel really good about the future of the basketball program.
Yeah, it's. I think I said it at some point when we were in Slack, just sort of chatting about, you know, what it takes to be a consistent winner in college basketball. And, you know, the reality is, you know, you can have sort of these one-off dream, you know, situations where, you know, the right kind of kids all come together at the right time for one magical season. But if you want to be a consistent winner, you've got to mix in some top 100 type kids. Like you have to. And, you know, I imagine we've talked about this before, but, you know, one of the things that irritates, you know, both you and I is, you know, this sort of popular myth among a lot of WSU fans that Tony Bennett took, you know, four scrubs or five scrubs off the street and threw them in the NCAA tournament. And that, you know, because everybody loves, you know, the pack line and the system, and everybody's excited about the system. And, you know, and when, you know, he left and they hired Kim Bone, oh, we need the system, which I think there was some truth to that, you know, which we've talked about, but maybe not in the way people were thinking. Like, the system is not the end all be all. You know, the system's important, but what's more important than the system, and, you know, we should know this from watching, you know, the air raid over the last, you know, 8 years, is that it's the players you put in the system. And Tony Bennett's magic was his ability to identify guys who could play within his system and thrive within his system, right? And then, you know, people forget this too. I mean, people always point to Kyle Weaver. Oh, Kyle Weaver was a 2-star recruit. True. But Derek Lowe was a 4-star recruit. Like, Derek Lowe was a pretty big time recruit when we signed him. So, you know, there was a lot of that. I mean, you know, Abe Lodwick, people like, oh, you know, goofy Abe Lodwick. Well, Abe Lodwick was a high 3-star kid. Like, you know, I mean, that, you know, he lured some pretty decent talent. And obviously he saw some things that maybe other people didn't see in some of these guys. But at the same time, you know, he didn't do it with a bunch of scrubs. You got to have a baseline level of talent. And where you get that talent doesn't really matter, but you got to have it. And what Kyle Smith is doing is what Tony Bennett did. He's, you know, looking in, you know, places that are, you know, maybe where you're maybe a little more likely to convince a kid to come to WSU. Like, you know, you're not luring too many 4-star kids, you know, from the United States to Pullman. And, you know, so what do you do? Well, you know, you go international. I mean, this is how Gonzaga built their program. I mean, I wrote a thing, you know, before Ernie was hired, talking about, like, hey, this is, you know, we should be doing the Gonzaga plan, which is, you know, looking at all these places where you can maybe lure talent that's not traditional. So love what he's doing. And now you can look and you can see with this class, I mean, they probably won't all pan out, but, you know, there's a baseline level of talent there that has the potential to grow into sort of a sustained winner. And I don't think any of us really saw this coming with Kyle Smith. I think we knew he could coach. But, you know, I mean, the idea that, you know, he's luring guys like this to Pullman is fairly exciting.
Yeah. Very exciting. It's just, he's doing this obviously by just, you know, after a 16-16 season. And, you know, if they show more progress, who knows the type of kids he can pull away, especially with his staff gets more and more, you know, time with these kids. But yeah, it's, and I'm stoked for this. Like, I really hope that we have a basketball season. I want to
wear your masks, people.
Yeah. Wear your masks. I want to see these kids play, man. I'm more excited for this than football season by far. And it's just, yeah, I hope a lot of Cougs are too. You should be excited about this basketball program right now. They are definitely on the rise, and there's no reason to believe that they're not going to continue rising. And so, this is pretty great, especially as basketball nerds. We are all about this. Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Maybe let's take a quick break, and then we'll get into some beer, some football recruiting, of course, and some other stuff. We got some more Coug stuff on the way. So we'll go ahead and take a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
And we're back.
Woohoo.
Woo.
All right, woo. Jeff. What are you drinking?
I'm on repeat. I did this a couple weeks ago. Might have even been 2 weeks ago.
God,
but
damn it, Jeff.
I know. I had one more fanzine left in the fridge, and I wanted to drink it. So it's a Fort George fanzine, which I talked about a couple weeks ago. It's a collaboration with Grains of Wrath. And, yeah, it's a darn tasty IPA. I know you have a Fort George beer, though.
I do.
It's a little more exclusive than mine.
Yeah, it's exclusive. They only sell it to certain people.
is that like for real, or are you joking?
Well, no, just the way you said it was exclusive. Like, it just
I kind of wanted
it
to think of like you going down to Fort George and like walking in, and they're like, "Oh, hi, Mr. Powers. We will sell this beer to you."
There's not like, you know, people, not everyone pays like $20 for a 16 or 500 milliliter beer, but
yeah.
But yeah, so I obviously, on the way back from our Oregon trip, we drove through Astoria, and I did an online order and a quick pickup from Fort George. We actually wanted to stop somewhere and grab some food in Astoria, but the kid was asleep in the car, and we were not going to disrupt that. So we just kept on going.
Yeah.
Astoria is very nice. I would have loved to stop there. I really like that town, but like, nope.
Yeah. Nope.
Like, I stopped, ran out, picked up the beer, went out. So I picked up, Fort George has a yearly bourbon barrel aged Russian Imperial Stout. They called Matryoshka or Matryoshka. I don't know how to say it exactly. But they do quite a few variants on it every year. It started as they do these variants for their Festival of the Dark Arts, which is a festival I've really wanted to go to. I think it's in February every year down in Astoria. It's just a like pretty much stout exclusive festival. I've heard great things from friends that have went. So I heard it's a blast. Astoria is a cool town. Obviously, there's Reach Break Brewing is like a block from Fort George, and then right across there is the bottle shop that is escaping my name, Bridge and Tunnel Bottle Shop, which is one of the better bottle shops in Oregon, is right there as well. So this is a variant of Matryoshka. It is the Matryoshka Maple Bourbon Barrel Aged Russian Imperial Stout with maple and coffee added. So a maple bourbon barrel is a bourbon barrel that was then aged, that then had maple aged in it, maple syrup aged in it, which bourbon barrel maple syrup is a thing that happened, and it's pretty common in Vermont to see that happen. There's some breweries in Vermont, like Hill Farmstead, that sell bourbon barrel aged maple syrup. In Michigan, you'll see some breweries do that and stuff. So the places where maple syrup is made in the U.S., they do this. So this was aged in that, and then they obviously added more maple and coffee to it. So I am, in honor of that, I'm wearing my Vermont Maple Kings hat right now. That is not actually a team. It is one day a year the Vermont Lake Monsters, a single A baseball club, changed their name to the Vermont Maple Kings, and they have a whole branding for it and everything. It's pretty cool. I love the hat. It's great. I like to have a minor league cap from all the towns I've lived in. And this is my one for Vermont. Interestingly, I was at Peaks and Pints getting some beer to go the other day. It's a place in Tacoma. And the guy had a Vermont Lake Monsters hat on. And so I was like, hey, did you live in Vermont, or you know, are you from Vermont? You know someone from Vermont? And he's like, no, he just is really into like mythological creatures like that, like, you know, like the Loch Ness Monster and you know, Sasquatch and things like that. So the Vermont Lake Monster is named out. There's like a creature there's like a mythical creature in Lake Champlain in near Burlington, which is between Burlington and New York State. And so he just bought it because of that. And so I thought that was funny. But anyway, so my Maple King's hat on to have this maple beer. I will say I'm not always a huge fan of the maple bourbon barrel aged beers. The maple, because it's kind of like the maple doesn't add as much to the barrel as you would think, I think. I think it pulls out like some, it grabs some of the bourbon characteristics and doesn't leave behind quite as much as the bourbon had itself. So there's always this kind of like this characteristic of maple bourbon barrel aged beers that I don't like as much as bourbon barrel, but I wanted to give it a shot. It had some good ratings and stuff. It's not a super sweet beer as you would expect with a maple and maple. It's also a Russian Imperial Stout base. So a lot of times with these maple beers, you'll see them in kind of sweeter stout bases to kind of just amp up the sweetness. I'm pretty grateful for that. I'm drinking the whole 500 milliliter bottle, like 16.9 ounces of this. It's 12.7%. If it was a big old sweet bomb, akin to like Double Stack from another Oregon brewery, Great Notion, or something like that, that'd be really tough. But this is kind of, it's balanced maple. The coffee is really light. It's not a lot there. Russian Imperial Stout is a style that's so intense in itself that it's a different sort of thing when it's barrel aged compared to like maybe an oatmeal stout or a milk stout or something like that. It's more of a hoppier and more kind of harsh stout. So it doesn't play with the sweet additives that that you might expect, but I kind of like it. It balances it out. I'd probably prefer a regular bourbon barrel over a maple bourbon barrel on this, but it's still very nice. It drinks really easy at 12.7, but it still kind of has the body that you would hope. I enjoy it. It's very good. Matryoshka maple bourbon barrel aged with maple and coffee added. I picked up three other variants of Matryoshka that I can't get, you know, around here. And then a barley wine that they did in a collaboration with the Colorado brewery, which that was almost the one I drank tonight, but I like to let the barley wine sit longer. But yeah, so that's what I'm having. It's going to get me feeling pretty good. So maybe let's get into some more Coug talk.
Sounds delicious, by the way.
It's pretty damn good. It's getting better as I drink it more too.
That's always the best.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, Cougs, let's see, football.
Football. We have a football team.
I know. How many of our listeners waited around 40 minutes to listen to us finally talk about football?
It's pretty easy to fast forward.
I know. They know what they're getting with us. They know what they're getting. They signed up for it.
Yeah. So football, interesting secondary news this week.
Yeah.
First, I think the biggest news is Daniel Isom is returning to the team. He was dismissed for vague violation of team rules last year. It always seemed like even when Leach was still around that there was a chance he could come back. And now he has, he's back with the team. It was hard to evaluate him last year. He was playing out of position as a safety cause they needed him to after Jalen left. And then, and then they moved him to corner and then he was gone. And so, I think he's much stronger at corner. So I hope that that's what he gets to play when he comes back. He's got good size. I think he has some playmaking ability. But, it, you know, it's that defense was just all around awful last year. So it's just, yeah. Especially in the secondary. So it's hard to evaluate some of the guys. He wasn't the guy at Arizona State that was getting completely annihilated by a future NFL receiver, but that was the guy he'll be trying to replace. But it's great to have him back because this secondary is going to be hella thin this year, thin on experience particularly. So it's good to have an experienced player back on the team.
Yeah, I mean, it, you know, can't hurt, number one. And like you said, it was hard to get a read on, you know, really evaluating anybody because they were so, so bad. And then, you know, something I think we've, you know, kind of talked about before is that, you know, the word dysfunction just comes to mind. Like,
right.
Like everything just seemed dysfunctional. And so who knows what a guy's actual talent level is? Who knows if he was being coached up the right way? I mean, it was a mess. It was a total, total mess. So what I do know is, you know, when I went to, and this is, of course, always extremely dangerous, but when I went to spring practices, you know, a year and whatever ago, he looked really good at corner. Like really looked pretty clearly like the best corner on the team. And of course that was, like you mentioned, before he got, you know, swapped into safety out of need and then thrown back at corner. And of course every corner looked like they had no clue what their job was. And then he was gone. So I have a lot of hope that he could actually still be a pretty good player. Again, this is all, it's all contingent on him getting coaching and there actually being a season and whatever. But, you know, I felt like just kind of watching him practice that he definitely looked like he was, you know, physical enough to hold his own, did not look overmatched. And so that's, you know, there's some potential there, for him to step back in and be pretty good, I hope. So, certainly can't hurt,
right.
You know, can't hurt. And, you know, I mean, the team, that defense needs all the help it can get. And so having a cornerback, cornerback back is a good thing, is a good thing. So, and you know, and I mean, let's, you know, I'll even just, you know, put it this way too. I mean, look, you know, I'm all for kids getting opportunities. He's not really a kid. Obviously, he's a, you know, he's a senior, but, you know, I'm all for guys getting opportunities and being able to see their career out and get a chance to play because it's a pretty special thing. So good for him that he was able to work it out with Rolovich. You know, nobody seems to know what, you know, what caused him to get dismissed in the first place. I would not be shocked if it eventually came out that it was pretty flimsy, just because that whole defense was so out of control, just, you know, like I said, dysfunctionally, that I would not be shocked if he, you know, talked back to a coach or something and was sent packing. I mean, like, I would not be shocked if it ended up being something like that. So good on him to come back. You know, who knows if it was one of the third rail things. I, you know, we'll see. It may come out at some point, but I would not be shocked if it was something relatively minor and they were just trying to get a handle on what was a spiraling situation.
Yeah. Welcome back, Daniel Isom. Another more secondary news, more much needed secondary news. Elijah Lloyd from San Marcos.
Much needed recruiting news.
Much news.
We just need like some really good recruiting news.
So yeah, definitely the highest rated recruit of the class of 10 so far, Elijah Lloyd. So 5'10", 175-pound quarterback, or cornerback from Mission Hills in San Marcos, California, committed last week. So, yeah, you know, between him and Isom, secondary, I think, got a boost going ahead this season. There was definitely an area of need. There's quite a lot of areas of need on the defense, but having a couple cornerbacks in the rotation. They also had a safety commit, Adrian Shepherd from Texas, a couple weeks ago, which we I don't think we talked about. So, you know, again, this class hasn't been, you know, blowing our face pants off yet so far, but no. Lloyd's a good piece. Right now the national rank of the class is 69, which is, if you're going to be bad, at least, you know, that's a good number to be at. So 10 nice. In, obviously we still got, you know, 15 guys to go, but, we'll see how that plays out. This is all just a weird time. This is a good get.
Yeah, there's going to be, I feel pretty confident saying there's going to be a lot of weirdness with recruiting between now and when these guys actually sign, because, you know, the lack of visits and whatever else. And I don't know, I've been trying to talk myself into the idea that the less than impressive group that has so far committed, is the coaching staff just trying to make sure that the floor doesn't fall out.
Yeah.
At least that's what I keep trying to tell myself, because I'm like, the alternative is, you know, is way too depressing. But you know, if we're going to be, you know, charitable and maybe look for a simple explanation for a recruiting class so far that is maybe not at the level that we hoped, you know, you just say, okay, well, maybe they're just making sure that, you know, there's at least some level, some baseline level of talent, that they don't, you know, get stuck holding the bag here in, you know, December. And, you know, maybe they've only got, you know, 10 commits or 15 commits or something around December, and really have what could potentially be a real problem, right, for the early signing day. So, you know, they've got 10 guys in the fold now. You know, they seem, you know, again, like we've said, no need to beat that into the ground, that, you know, it seems like a little lower quality than what we've gotten used to. And not that Leach's recruiting classes were, you know, blowing people out of the water, but, you know, it's not quite what we were hoping for out of Rolovich. But, again, you know, I'm just not sure what the play is here. And, you know, and then you also hear a lot of speculation about there, you know, potentially being a lot of movement once things open back up for recruiting visits and things like that. So,
right.
You know, I guess it's just something to keep an eye on. You know, this kid does not seem like one that they, that is a, you know, at risk for, you know, being cast aside when something better comes along. I think they really do like him. He's very fast. That's kind of his calling card, is that he's a 100 meter kid, a track yeah. kid. And may in fact try to run track while at WSU as well. So, yeah, so that's a good deal. And you know, you really can never have too much speed. That's a good one. And then there was one other commit. We didn't talk about this beforehand, but all of a sudden I remembered it. Another defensive back, and it's a JUCO kid who, if he makes it to school, would be eligible this fall, and that's Jalen Watson. So he was a one-time USC commit like a year right. ago. And then, apparently by what he said, did not qualify after 2 years of junior college, which simply means he didn't get his associates after 2 years.
Right.
Said he was reopening his recruitment. And then said he was going to plan on being eligible in December. He was not, apparently, at least this kind of stuff you could read into it, was not eligible in December. And then he committed last week, which means that he probably got eligible by completing his associates last week after 3 years. So, if he shows up, as far as I know, I don't think there's been any official news that he has signed a financial aid agreement or anything like that. So perhaps it's still a little up in the air as to whether he arrives, but or maybe he's got one more. I mean, who knows? Maybe he's got one more class to go this summer and everybody felt comfortable that he was going to get there. You know, who knows? But he, yeah, if, you know, he's a physical kid, 6'2", 195. I mean, that's pretty large for a cornerback. And, yeah. You know, seems like, you know, he's talented enough for USC to be interested. So at this point, you know, that's good enough for me.
Yeah. Obviously, you must have been a pretty decent recruit out of high school. I think we can check that.
Yeah, he wasn't rated out of high school, but, you know, I mean, that could be, you know, as much about academics as anything else. You know, right. If they know a yeah. kid's not going to qualify, then they just don't bother evaluating him at all. So,
yeah,
I think that'd be my guess.
And
of what happened? So,
according to 247, he was, you know, he had USC offering him again. So, in Arizona. So, yeah, you know, like you said, good size, and again, just throw some bodies on the pile for the secondary situation, because it can't get much worse.
Yep, and you know, I mean, you know, the thing that obviously comes up is, you know, where does the scholarship come from? Coug Fan wrote a story on it. I did not read it because I don't have a Coug Fan subscription, but I'm assuming it's a similar situation after the death of Tyler Holinsky, where the NCAA gives you another initial scholarship. So you only sign, you know, typically can only sign 25. I'm guessing they're allowed to sign 26 with the death of Bryce Beekman. So, so that's how that fits. And again, yeah, I mean, obviously a position of extreme need.
Yeah.
On the, you know, or not necessarily in terms of players, it's not like there aren't bodies, but obviously extreme need in terms of an upgrade in performance. So you know, add another guy to the pile, and you know, can't hurt. Is kind of like when you added, you know, Gage Gabrud, and went, you know, well, if he doesn't get there, then, you know, I mean, you just add another guy to the pile, and that doesn't hurt. And so yeah it's a good sign.
Yeah, so you know, we could add Jalen Watson, and then an Anthony Gordon level safety will come out and just, like, play. That'd be great. Let's have that.
That would be great. I could do with that. That'd be all right.
Just one of the guys we have waiting in the wings, ready to dominate.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. So football. Will they play? Will they? Won't?
Football.
Who knows?
That's
whatever.
Probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
I just can't get that excited about it, because I like, and typically this time
this
of year I'm starting to write some football stories, like I'm feeling pretty good, and I'm just like, I can't even.
This has been a change for you, because I know we talked about this on an earlier episode, and I was being skeptical about, you know, probably about a month ago or two. I don't know, man, we haven't done that many lately.
Yeah.
So it's hard to know. And obviously, with the rise in cases in the U.S., coronavirus, COVID-19 cases, just everything. So it seems nuts that baseball is going to try to play a season, and MLS is...
Wear a fucking mask.
MLS and
people.
NBA. MLS and NBA want to play in Florida.
I know.
Hey, and I'll say, like, Even your dear leader Trump is advocating wearing a mask at this point. So just wear a fucking mask. Like,
did he finally turn on that today?
Yeah, he says it makes him look like Lone Ranger. Which,
maybe he's
wearing it over his eyes. Then I don't
did
know.
Did he cut holes in it and put it over his eyes?
Which,
yeah.
Then that's you know, a whole.
I don't think it does much good up there.
But yeah, so I don't,
Mr. President,
I saw Sean Hannity advocating. So like literally, like I don't know where you are if you're. If you're on those guys, if you were following those guys' advice, they're now saying, wear the mask. Let's just all wear a mask. It's fine. It's not going to kill you. If it is going to kill you, then you don't have to wear a mask and just be happy that everyone else is. Wear a fucking mask. I don't want to deal with this for a whole nother year.
And this shit's serious.
And you don't
people
need to go
die.
To the bar. Stop going to the bar. You don't need
stop
to
go going
to
the bar. I mean, there was a story on NBC News tonight that, you know, California man who posted regret for attending party died a day later of coronavirus. Like, yeah,
so,
I mean, this happens.
So how'd that go for all the other people at that party in the next couple weeks?
I mean, come on. The guy's like, you know, went to a party because he's not afraid of coronavirus, and then he catches it, and then he's like, actually, it's no joke, and then the next day he's dead. Like, that's horrible.
Wait,
come
so
on,
he went to the party and died the next day?
So he went to the party. He got it.
Oh, okay. Got sick. I was like, because when I saw it, when I saw someone post that, I was like, you wouldn't get coronavirus and then die the next day. That's not how it, but whatever. Yeah.
He basically was like,
he already had it and he knew
exactly.
He was
2 weeks later,
shape.
He was like, this sucks. You know, don't, you know, this is for real.
Well,
you
that's
know,
what I was like. I was,
wear a mask, practice social distancing. And then the next day was when he died. So pretty horrible.
Yeah. That's what, and that's Amanda and I have been feeling like, you know, stress for going to, you know, Seaside and going to the main part and just seeing how many people were just, did not apparently not worried about it, and we should have just turned around and we didn't. We kept walking, and you know, that probably wasn't a good decision. And yeah, just stay home when you can and put off going to get that beer at that bar that you've been missing. I've been missing it too, but I've went to pick up beer at E9 and there's tons of people out there, and it gives me, you know, the
but
willies.
If we do this right, then we can have some fun.
Yeah.
Like I saw it put that way. So New Zealand is having sporting events with people in the stands. And it's like, I saw a tweet where somebody said that this is like the elementary school class that has good behavior. And so they get the pizza party. Like they get, like New Zealand gets to do the fun stuff because they did the hard work, you know? And it sure would be nice if we would do that. Now, I do think, I will say, I do think that definitely there will be football of some kind. I don't know if it's in the fall. I think that's looking less and less likely. Maybe it's in the spring. But, you know, I stand by my original point that, you know, it is, it's critical to these schools that there's a football season of some variety. So, I still think that's going to happen. I just don't know where and when and how, but, I think the great irony of like the NBA and, you know, the NBA and the MLS plan and all that is that, and the MLB plan is they're like, well, we'll go to Florida. Right. You know, and when they started making these plans, you know, Florida was wide open and their cases were OK. And, you know, they were sort of looking, you know, people were talking about how the governor was looking like a visionary because they had, you know, done right. And, you know, everything was all right. And, you know, and now they are, you know, all these leagues, I guess MLB only sort of came to an agreement in the last week, but you know, NBA has been working on this for weeks. MLS has been working on this for weeks. Like, you know, they started this process when things were okay. And then, you know, as it turns out, you know, letting people go back to bars was a bad idea. And now you've got, you know, COVID everywhere. So, you know, I honestly think I know that cases are going up again a bit in on the West Coast. You know, Washington obviously is dealing with its own thing. You know, particularly in, you know, some of our more rural counties in Eastern Washington with, you know, like processing plants and agriculture and things like that. But I feel much more confident that the Western states possess the ability to perhaps kind of get it back under control and maybe be in a decent spot by fall versus, you know, the basically the entire Southeast of the United States. When you look at maps of, you know, counties and they use like, you know, green, yellow, orange, red type coding. You just see red, you know, basically from Arizona to Florida. And I don't know that's necessarily going to change, but, you know, hopefully we do have a football season of some kind to do. I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe they split it. Maybe we do half the games in the fall and half the games in the spring. And then it's, you know, it becomes very exciting. And maybe if we're really lucky, we won't play Washington.
Yeah, just anything. I think the main thing is to not play Washington.
As long as there's no Apple Cup, I'm happy.
Yeah. I don't know. I wish, I hope. It's been nice having sports to watch, but I do love sports in person, and I hope to get to do that someday. Speaking of, you mentioned MLS, but I'm not going to call the NWSL their counterpart, because NWSL is a much higher league in this, is, you know, the top female league in the world. And, while the MLS is, certainly not for the men. But they
did a really smart thing by playing in Utah.
Yeah, they've been playing in Utah. They've been playing in the mountains. So they're doing they're basically doing a tournament with their 8-8. The Orlando Pride pulled out because they had 10 players who went to a bar and contracted coronavirus.
In Florida.
Protect Ashlyn Harris at all costs. She is my queen. Do not harm her in any way, Orlando. I do love Ashlyn Harris though. Our girl Morgan Weaver has gotten her first two games of professional soccer action. Came in the second half, around the 54th minute or so of the first match. Played a wing on the left, which is a good spot for her, with her speed. Had a couple shots, no real great chances. She did not look like it took her a bit, I think, to work herself into it. Early on, she did not look the aggressive Morgan Weaver that I remember. She looked like, you know, she was a little timid, but definitely by about 10 minutes in of her playing, she was definitely pressing a lot more and being more active to get going and getting the ball. But definitely looked like she belonged. She gets to play alongside one of the best strikers in soccer history, and Christine Sinclair, which is pretty cool. Gets her some open looks. She got one today in their match, wide open look in front of the goal, able to get a foot on it, but a nice save by the goalie kept her from getting her first goal. So it'll be happening.
Goalie.
Yeah, stupid goalie. They ended up tying 0-0. So
they ruin everything.
So the good news is the Thorns only have 1 point through two matches. I love you, Morgan, but rain forever.
Yeah. I hope she scores, and I hope they lose and all that stuff.
But yeah, I don't know. It's hard. Like, I felt myself like rooting for the Thorns while I was watching, because if you're rooting for an attacking forward, then it's really hard not to just root for the team overall, because like you're like, push the ball forward. Come on, get her the ball, get her the ball, get her the ball. Come on, she's open. Get it to her, you know? So that's going to be a struggle for me. The rain opened up with a 0-0 tie. It was a pretty boring match. I got my CBS All Access free preview, which I'm going to have to turn into a subscription so I can watch the rest of the matches. But there's been some fun matches so far. If you're looking for sports to watch, there was a 3-3 draw already. I like some, which is nuts. Like, some fun soccer going on there. These are the best women's players in the world. Yeah. Dabinha on the North Carolina team is a Brazilian player, and she is an absolute blast to watch.
Yeah, it's a good it's good stuff to watch, man. And as usual, the women are ahead of the men on a lot of things. So, you know, activism, and so that's been a part of it with them as well. And then, you know, just restarting their league correctly. They're not going to have a problem with having to shut it down. And, you know, all these other leagues may not even get off the ground because they want to go, you know, stay in the Disney bubble and pay back their Disney TV partners. And that might actually end up being the non-starter. So, you know, if they were really serious about it, they'd be doing what, you know, the NWSL is doing. They'd be, you know, having their restart in Montana or North Dakota or something.
Salt Lake City is not exactly North Dakota.
No, it's not. But at the same time, you know, obviously the situation's much better there.
And, yeah, absolutely.
You know, they don't much lower of a risk if you do happen to expose yourself at, you know, say a restaurant or something, much lower risk of catching it. Right. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying, like, you know, maybe they were, all these leagues were kind of maybe thinking about this all wrong. I understand there's like logistics, you got to have facilities or whatever, but, you know,
I mean, you don't need a place with a bunch of seats.
No, you don't. No, you don't. You just need a fancy hotel and some places for them to practice. And, you know, I don't know, man. I think maybe they weren't thinking quite big enough about it. They I think were thinking, you know, especially MLS, I know, was trying to scratch the back of ESPN and Disney so that, you know, they could maybe earn some goodwill heading into another TV contract negotiation. But I don't know, man.
Yeah.
It's... I don't know. I don't know. I think Disney MLS will probably push ahead.
Disney / ESPN has a whole sports complex down there.
Yeah. ESPN or MLS will probably push ahead because their players are not as well compensated.
Yeah, they need the money.
As MLB or NBA.
To that point, the NWSL is the same way. A lot of these players play in international leagues in the off season to compensate their income. Australia is a common place or whatever. Like, I looked it up and, you know, there's a good chance like Morgan Weaver's making like 20 grand playing in the NWSL. Like, it's not a highly compensated league. They have allocation money and they have, you know, they can pay their top players a little more. So hopefully she's getting more than that. But like the top salaries aren't super high at without allocation money and the so it's not a
and the top players make more of a salary from their national team pay.
Yep, absolutely.
The way that's set up, which has been part of a highly publicized lawsuit, but they do actually make a pretty decent chunk of change
to that
much point. More than they make for their domestic league.
So I was, you know, just you brought up the national team. So this was a thought I had in regards to Weaver's chance to make the national team. And keep in mind, she's already 23. So like it's in terms of like national team, that can be pretty old.
Yeah.
But you look at
to start breaking in for sure.
You look like someone like Lynn Williams, who has been a goal scoring machine in the NWSL. And she's barely gotten a look. Like, she has like 9 caps, and none of them are in major competitions. That's how deep the U.S. roster is. Like, it's Lynn Williams is a really good soccer player, and like she is not. She's barely getting a chance with the U.S. Women's national team. So that kind of like sobered me to the idea of Morgan getting a chance. Cause like, it's tough. Like it's super tough. She could be one of the best, you know, attacking forwards, you know, attacking wingers in the world. And still, I mean, you look at the players like that you have in her position, like Megan Rapinoe and Kristen Press and stuff like that, let her play for the national team. And someone like Lynn Williams, who's an incredible striker, doesn't even get a shot because she's got like Alex Morgan and Lloyd in front of her. So it's like it's just like it's a nuts, like such a deep program of very talented people. That kind of like, just because they were, you know, they were playing the courage. And so I'm getting to watch like both these sides and like, wow, Lynn Williams is super fun and she is so good. And I had barely ever heard of her before, honestly. Yeah. Like, I'm like, holy crap. Like, and so I'm like, why isn't she on the, and she's like barely gotten a touch like on the national team. And she scored like, she's one of the leading scorers every year in the NWSL. And she plays, like I said, she plays in Australia because she doesn't have that national team money as much, so she's got to go play internationally more. So she did, yeah, just this year. I think she was just trying to capture some money because Australia was playing some matches before we were. But yeah, she's a fun player, and her and Debinion, the Courage, are super fun to watch.
Yep.
So I didn't get to watch their match today, but I have no interest in the team, but I might go rewatch it just to see them.
Yep. Yeah, they're a super fun team. Pretty, I think they are. I'm not an NWSL expert by any means, but it seems like they're pretty head and shoulders above everybody else.
Yeah, I think they're far and away the favorite to win this this tournament. And, yeah.
And if we know anything from watching the Bundesliga and the English Premier League, that without home field advantage, the more talented teams usually win. So.
Yeah, well,
it's been a pretty interesting study in what home field advantage does for teams, and it turns out quite a bit.
Well, our beloved BVB, that didn't Except work out so them. Well for yeah. them last
yeah.
in their last match of the season, where they had absolutely nothing to play for, and the team they're playing for had ever playing against had a everything lot to play for. So,
yeah.
Losing 4-0. But congrats to Hoffenheim on not having to go through the Euro qualifying stage.
Yeah,
Europa.
Good for them.
Stage, because that's a pain in the ass. And sorry to Wolfsburg, who now gets to do that. BVB. Ugh,
that's all right.
And the new jerseys too. God, what are you doing to me? Oh
yeah, I
God.
Don't particularly like those.
Definitely, I'm not going to get one of those.
I think I'll stick with the one I've got.
Yep.
I don't know, man.
I don't need the lightning bolts.
And, yeah.
They've tweeted a lot of pictures of them today. So.
Yeah. No thanks.
Yeah.
No thanks.
And it looks like lightning bolts, but kind of like tiger stripes. I'm not sure. I don't know.
Like when they do like a tiger like clawing and then like tearing away the
not great, but yeah, they'll be back in like 2 months or something, right? It's not a long time until all that starts up again. Soccer season is very long and almost continuously.
Well, it should
ongoing.
Be start. It's gonna start up again like tomorrow.
Yeah,
it's kind of what it feels like.
Yeah.
I mean, they really do. Like,
I mean,
they start,
that's how it is with the Sounders. You know,
the European League start their preseason in August, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're going to get like a few weeks off, and then it's going to be right back at it. So
I think they might even have Champions League.
Yeah, we will not have to live without our beloved BVB for very long.
Yeah, I want to get back to getting up at 6 in the morning on Saturday.
Heck yeah.
That's what I want to do.
It really is. Like, in the fall, it's awesome because, like, not that getting up at 6 a.m. is awesome, but I'm old, so it doesn't really matter. And, you get up, you watch some soccer, and then right into game day and right into football. So it's actually not half bad. Kids are still asleep. I get coffee and soccer all to myself while everybody's still in bed. It's a pretty damn good deal, actually.
And we have our new team, our next team, Tottenham now.
Yeah. We're charging toward the Champions League.
Thank you to Tim Huddleston, who sent me a Tottenham kit. And then also, because I had asked, Sounders on Twitter to, because their black and neon green jersey from 2015 won a contest for like best MLS jersey ever. And so I was like, sell that. So I said, sell them again, like, so I can get one. And then, Tim Olsen, he just reached out to me and said, hey, I got one. You want one? And I was like, sure. And so now I got one of those. And then, he sent me a Tottenham one too. So
that's awesome.
I'm all set. It's an Under Armour. It's when they were with Under Armour, and it's very, very form fitting.
I was gonna say, I'll bet it's very slim.
And so I probably won't don it until I lose a few more pounds. So
I was very pleasantly surprised to find out that my Dortmund replica jersey was true to size for an American extra large.
Oh yeah, thank you, thank you, Puma.
Yeah, I appreciate that. But I know that, like, so it was kind of a big deal in the Premier League a few years, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, when I think Arsenal was kind of the first one to go to the pretty tight form fitting kit. And it was kind of a big deal because you know, the portly English gentlemen who wanted to buy a replica jersey were like, I can't wear this crap, you know? So, I'm sure that's kind of where you ended up with that Spurs jersey.
Yeah. I ordered a t-shirt and a hat that are going to come in tomorrow.
Did you get the white hat?
No.
Oh,
I don't wear white.
Coward.
No, I don't want to wear that shit.
The white hat was so sharp though.
I want a sharp navy one with just the logo, but I got the one that had the team spelled out, and it's got the rooster, whatever the fuck that is. Yeah. The Hotspur on the back.
The cockerel standing on an old timey football.
It's got that on the back. And I got B a shirt with it because you know, it's an animal, so she's excited.
Yeah, Tottenham's fun, man. Like that was kind of the biggest thing, like when I kind of started getting into him. Like I got into him because Zane, you know, our very own Zane Murfitt, who was, you know, on the show with us a few weeks ago.
Who knows way more about soccer than either of us.
Yeah, he's like, okay, so we joke about being lifelong Dortmund fans. Like, it's a, like, you know, that's obviously a running gag. Zane really is like a long time Tottenham Hotspur fan.
He's been
like,
to a match.
Yeah, he went to a match at the old White Hart Lane, and which was their previous stadium. And so he's like long time. So I'm like, you know, it'll be cool to follow Spurs because he does, and that'll give us something to talk about, and that's cool. I actually started following Everton like 5 years ago.
Yeah, I remember that disaster.
A really bad decision. Like, they had like a top. They finished in sixth. They finished in fifth. And I was like, you know what? They've got Tim Howard in goal. That's really cool. He's an American, right? So that's really cool. And they're going to be in Europa League. This is a team that's on the come up. Like, they had Romelu Lukaku at the time. Like, I'm like, yeah, Ross Barkley.
Lukaku's hella fun.
Yeah, you know. So I mean, he was young. He was on loan at the time. But it was just like, you know, like, yeah. I mean, they've got these young, talented guys. You know, they had Ross Barkley. I'm trying to remember who the center, John Stones, who now is with I think Manchester City. So they like had all these young, talented guys. It was like, all right, this is cool. And then Roberto Martinez, who is now the manager for Belgium for their national team, was the manager, and he just like it was like a flaming pile of poo. And just like the worst thing. And then they were even, I think, even worse the next year. And then he got fired. And so it was like, oh, that I have not chosen wisely. And in the meantime, I could have chosen Liverpool, which, you know, God damn it. Like, I could have had that. And
he certainly lived
Liverpool
up to expectations with Belgium.
Yeah. So I'm just like, you know. So anyway, so I start following Spurs this year, and then I'm like, and this they weren't having a great season. I mean, the coach got fired, but who was like the guy who led them to sort of, you know, unseen heights in recent history. But they just have a lot of like really cool, likable players. Harry Kane is a guy who's super easy to like.
Yeah.
Youngman Son is like this incredible like fast winger, and he's always got a smile on his face, and he just plays with such like cool enthusiasm. So I don't know. They've just got some guys who's like, you know, Moussa Sissoko, honestly reminds me of just like a bigger version of Ozzy Alonso, just with the way he plays. Right. He just runs around and destroys things, which is cool. And so anyway, so they're kind of a fun team. They apparently, so Jose Mourinho's the coach now, which he's like Darth Vader, I guess.
Yeah.
So that part kind of sucks, but other than that, they're pretty fun. So yeah. So if you jump on board, if you didn't jump on board BVB, you can, you know, jump on board the Spurs train. They got a match coming up. I don't know, Friday, Thursday. Thursday or Friday? Tomorrow?
It's tomorrow.
Tomorrow's Thursday. It's Thursday.
Tomorrow.
Or today, because if you're listening to this podcast.
You're almost certainly not going to listen to this before.
Yeah, probably not.
You could, though. You could. It's at 10 a.m. Pacific time. So you
Yeah,
could.
The podcast will be out sometime in the morning. So
you
I suppose it's possible.
Listen to this and be like, well, I got nothing to do. It's probably on NBC Sports, I think. I think
probably.
The match is on NBC Sports.
Probably.
So. I don't think I'm going to get my new Tottenham hat in by 10 a.m., but
probably not.
We'll see.
But I got my blue t-shirt, you know, it's, I got, you know, with the cockerel on the front.
I got a gray one, 'cause they didn't have any of the blue ones in my size, but. So I'm rolling with a gray one, but B's got a cool blue one. I'm jealous. But nice. I have plenty of navy blue in my wardrobe already. Pretty much a lot of brewery t-shirts, Mariners, Seahawks, things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So soccer talk. Welcome
soccer
to,
talk.
Welcome to soccer talk with Craig and Jeff.
That's right.
Hey man, what else you got to watch? What else you got to watch this time?
Nothing, like, because right now we keep getting fucking sick and nobody will wear their masks.
Yeah.
God damn it. Everybody else gets to have nice things. By the way, it is on NBC Sports.
Yeah.
At 10 a.m.
All right. Man, I guess...
I think that's probably it.
Yeah,
man.
We added bonus stuff that we didn't plan on talking, so
it's true.
There you go. We're checking in on our regular nearly hour and a half, so
yeah,
I think we've done a good job.
We covered it all.
Yeah, I'm excited for Borussia Dortmund. I mean, wait, WSU to play sports again. Or Borussia. I still can't say it. I know it's Borussia, but it's Borussia in my head, and I can't. Get over it, but I didn't even open my second beer. I'm bummed. Oh, I brought one.
What's wrong with you?
Holy Mountain Three Fates, one of my all-time.
Oh, I had that. I had that last week.
It's a beautiful Czech Pils.
Yes, it is.
I picked up a couple 4-packs from there.
Yes.
I'll have it after, I guess. It's 11 o'clock. Maybe I won't. Maybe I'll just go to sleep. I don't know.
Maybe. Well, nothing puts you to sleep like another beer, so...
It is.
You probably do that.
Does a great job.
It's true.
All right. Well,
all right.
Black Lives Matter. Don't forget that. That's still a thing.
Yes, it is. Even if SPD tries to not make it a thing by shoving people around
If you're inclined, please listen to that, our episode on that a couple episodes back. It's important. The causes that you may have donated to in the last couple of weeks will still need support.
Yes.
Throughout. So just remember that. Nothing has been.
Black lives will still matter. Even
Mississippi
when this is over.
Changing their flag is only one part of many things that need to be fixed. So.
Yep.
All right.
Indeed.
All right, man. Go Cougs.
Go Cougs, Craig.